On FM, on DAB, and up to date on social media. We are Radio Newark. Radio
Newark. Hey, 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 Kevin Guthrie here, talking all things mental health and well-being. Thank you for listening today. We have a guest in the studio, as we always do. So today we have Connick McFarland Hunt. Thank you, Connick, for being here.
No problem. Nice to see you, Kevin. Thank you very much.
It's great to have you. So I'm going to start off with a listener question, as I always do. So somebody typed in and said, what's the difference between counselling and coaching? So I thought it was a great question. So for me, the most obvious difference is coaching is a little bit more direct. It's a little bit more handheld. It's a little bit more, how are we going to get there? With counselling or therapy, it's just, I guess it goes a little bit deeper. I guess it, particularly psychotherapy, is a lot deeper. But it's less hand-holdy and more, as a therapist, we throw things back quite a lot. We throw things back at the client quite a lot. My assumption is in coaching that doesn't happen quite so much. Connick, what do you think to that question?
You know, I think there's a bit of handholding in both, and I agree with you. I think less so much in life coaching, but life coaching for me feels very much of getting you to live the best version of your life that you can. So yeah. You know, having done it myself as being a mental health coach, you know, I've got a chap that wants to do something. He wants to be a writer, so it's trying to get him to start thinking about that and how he can do that and getting him from A to B. There's a clear goal that he has yeah. wants to do of holding his hand and getting him from that A to B goal so that he can go and achieve that. With counselling, I think it's more, there seems to be like quite a lot of trauma that comes out of it and things that they delve into at the past that you're trying to explain so that they understand why you are where you are now. And I don't think that's coaching at all.
No.
If I'm really honest, I prefer a coaching approach to it.
Yeah.
And I feel having been coached and having coached people, there's a lot more reward at the end of it.
Okay.
So what I mean like is kind of like that gold star moment. So
Connick, you know I'm a therapist, don't you?
I do know you're a therapist, so this is kind of why I'm like tripping in my words and trying to be careful here, because I know that, you know, after this, I don't know what's going to happen.
No, I honestly, I'm joking with you. I honestly respect everybody's views on that. And I also respect the fact that you said that you would prefer a coach to a counsellor. My immediate response in my head is, so this is where my psychotherapeutic head goes to.
Okay.
What are you trying to avoid? Don't answer that. But that is immediately where my head goes to, which is really interesting. So we haven't fully introduced you. Tell me, we're here today to talk about Suicide Prevention Month, which is September.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why you stepped forward to want to be part of this recording today.
I think it's really important to represent guys in Suicide Month. I think guys have had a little bit of a rough deal. We've had years and years of man up, you know, years and years of, you know, men don't cry. You know, I've done it with my own children, you know, as has been done to me, where it's like, oh, you're all right, you know, just rub it in and get on with it. You're all right. Don't cry. You know, you're a man, X, Y, and Z. You're the man of the house. And I think that mentality has changed now, and at the end of the day I think guys are starting to come forward with how they feel and what's going on with their mental health. But like, you know, with women, they're really good at, you know, let's get a bottle of wine, let's go and talk to our girlfriends, whereas guys are kind of like, you know, I don't know who to talk to unless it's let's go and watch football at the pub. Who do you talk to? But even that, I feel, is not quite, I hate using the word, but the norm. It's not quite the norm anymore. We do watch football, we do watch rugby, but when we want to talk to people, who do we talk to? And I think it's really important for a guy that has gone through this and going through some of it to be able to come out and say, this is my story. And at the end of the day, there is help out there for you. So, you know, it's okay not to be okay. And it's okay to say, I need some help, and live the life that you want to live, not the life that society has taught us that we have to live. That's not relevant anymore, in my opinion.
You mentioned a story there.
Mm-hmm.
What is your story?
So, my story of mental health is I've got ADHD and PTSD. I didn't know that I had ADHD until last year. I suspected it when I watched a YouTube video with Mel Robbins in it.
Right.
And Mel Robbins was talking about her 5-second rule and the fact that she was ADHD. And she spoke about what happened to her, the feelings that she had, what it's like to have ADHD. And I was sitting there watching it thinking, that sounds just like me. I struggle with all those things. So I did some time in the RAF as a gunner. And I got quite stressed. I was the only gunner to fail the rifle test 3 times. And as a right. gunner, it's like I should know how to use yeah. my weapon and how to load it, et cetera, et cetera. And the more stressed I got, the more I was thinking, something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
I can't do this. Something's wrong with me. When my son started to get older and my daughter started to get older and I was reading stories to them and I was tripping over words or I couldn't understand the word. I couldn't help them with their math homework.
Yeah.
And it's like, something's wrong with me. I couldn't understand why my wife felt the way that she felt, and I'd say to her, it's just the way that I am, you know, it's just the way that I am. She's like, you know, Connor, you can change. No, it's just the way that I am. And behind all that, I'd go away from it thinking there is something wrong with me. That one day we sat down back in October last year. I remember us being in Costa, and I said to her, so, you know, same thing as I've just said, something's not right, something's wrong, and I don't know what's wrong. And my life was just getting worse and worse and worse. I was angry all the time, frustrated, stressed, depressed, and holding it all in,
yep.
keeping it all in. Fast forward a little bit is, unfortunately, my wife and I separated at the end of October. And throughout our 10-year relationship, there was quite a lot of on and off, on and off. And I realized that it was quite a lot of my doing, but I couldn't understand why I couldn't understand her feelings and the kids' feelings and yeah. anybody else's feelings. Everything just became completely overwhelming for me.
Yeah.
And you know, we split up, and I'm sure we'll get onto the what happened after that. But I found out that I was ADHD.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, this is the story that I have with the suicide. Is I did attempt to take my life. I did attempt it a couple of times. And that was when I realised that I needed some help. And I saw my therapist that was like, yep, classic ADHD case here, Connick. And we can give you some help. And then that brought me to changing my life.
What do you think she meant by classic case?
probably the fact that I'm absolutely hyperactive. So right. when I was I'm trying really hard at the minute to slow down how I'm talking to you, because right. I'm like the Energizer Bunny, and I just go off on one and I talk really, really fast, especially when I'm nervous. I talk very, very, very fast. And she looked at it in the way that I am. I know that the listeners can't see, but I'm being quite animatic with my hands. I'm moving them around quite a lot at the minute. And she looked at my whole body language,
yeah.
how I was talking to her, how fast I was talking, the fact that my eyes were darting all over the place. And she said, Connick, how do you feel right now when you're talking to me? And when you're talking to other people, how do you feel? And I said, I feel like there's a motor running all the time,
yeah.
and I can't turn it off. And she was like, right, that was like the alarm bells of
yeah.
ADHD. So they initially thought I was ADHD with autism and Asperger's.
Yeah.
And I had 3 different tests for it. And they were like, nope, there's no autism. Like, considering you are the life and soul of the party, Connick, and you'll talk to everybody, you're not autistic.
Yeah.
You don't have Asperger's. You have ADHD. And it was a bit of a sigh of relief moment. Because although I'm a person that I don't feel like I need a label for something, I think I needed to know
yeah.
that, to know, actually, I can do something about my life.
Yeah.
Actually, I can change, and it isn't just the way that I am. I can do something about it, and somebody's listened and identified
yeah.
and allowed me to feel that I'm not just being silly and I'm not just missing the point. There's yeah. a reason that I am missing the point, and I can do something about it.
Just for the listeners, tell us what ADHD stands for.
You know, I can't even say it because I forget. I'm dyslexic as well. Hypersensitivity disorder.
Yeah, cool. I wanted to ask you a question about the diagnosis, and you kind of touched on it a little bit there. And this is for, why am I asking the question? I do that in therapy sometimes. Why am I asking this question? I think it's because I personally have a thing about labels.
Okay.
So I want to know, from your mm-hmm. perspective, mm-hmm. did that label help?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it helped. It helped because I knew why I was doing the things that I was doing.
Right.
And that I could say to people, because typically, you know, I touched on with my wife and the whole, it's just the way that I am. So yeah. If my wife would try to explain something to me and I didn't get it,
yeah,
or I didn't want to do it that way, or didn't understand, or anything, I'd just say to her, it's just the way that I am. It's just the way that I am.
Yeah.
I'm driving like this because it's just the way that I am. I'm talking like this because it's just the way that I am.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, I couldn't change. There was no changing.
Yeah.
So what am I supposed to do about that? I can't do anything about it. But when the therapist said, you have ADHD, like I said, it was a sigh of relief, because all she said was, you've got ADHD, but what I heard was, we can help you.
Yeah.
And we can help you turn your life around. And of where I was at that moment in time, I was really struggling and didn't think that there was a life for me to lead at that point. So it was, I can't even explain it to you. It was a defining moment.
Cool. That was brilliant. Do you think you talked earlier about the couple of attempts at suicide.
Yeah.
How do you think the ADHD fed into that, if at all? Did it affect it? You being in that place?
I think it affected it in the way of how I thought about suicide. Everybody has a different story. Everybody will tell you something different of how they felt at that time. The first time round, I had been split up with my wife hours at this point. And we'd split up earlier in the day, and this was 11 o'clock at night. And I was, you know, sat in the car, just streaming in tears, just thinking, you know, I was so upset, and I couldn't cope at that moment in time, and all I could really hear in my head was, you know, you don't deserve this life.
Yeah.
Having put your wife and your kids through what you've put them through, you really don't deserve to be here, and, you know, you'll never change, and nobody will ever understand you, and ADHD gives you overthinking thoughts.
Yeah.
So you were thinking these self-limiting beliefs about yourself that weren't really there, that were leading me, I suppose, to wanting to take my life at that point. The second attempt, I think, I don't really think the ADHD fed into it. I think it was just, I was desperate at that point to make the pain that I was feeling stop. And I think, you know, people will tell you that it's not a selfish thing to want to take your life. It's where you're at a moment of everything's just completely too much.
Yeah.
You just need relief from that pain. And I understand, you know, it's a permanent solution to the problem that you're having. But at that moment in time, if you're feeling like that, it's because you are trying everything that you possibly can to take that pain away, and nothing is working. So the only thing you can come to is, if I'm not here anymore,
yeah,
I can't feel this anymore, because right now I don't have any tools to be able to deal with this.
So you mentioned the pain there. Mm-hmm. On the first attempt,
yep.
Was it the pain that you were feeling that you were trying to escape?
I think it was shame. At that point, I'd put my wife and my children through a lot, being ADHD, and then we have to take responsibility for our own actions. I'm happy to do that. Having ADHD made it 10 times worse, because you can't see things from the norm perspective of somebody that doesn't have ADHD. You see, your brain is wired in a completely different way, so you only see it one way. And you know, with Marie and I, we'd had quite a few separations, and, you know, I'd come back to the marriage, and I'd try really hard for a couple of weeks and get it right, and then after a couple of weeks I'd run out of tools, and I'd be back to my normal moody self and X, Y, and Z, and, you know, we'd split up again a year later, and then it was like a circle all the time, you know, for like the last 7 years of our life. So when it came to the breakup that we had, and the way that it was done, and the fact that I absolutely completely lost my temper. I have never screamed and shouted quite as much as I did that day. And my temper was getting worse and worse and worse as the years went on, and I completely lost it. And having put the three of them through what I had, especially that last 24 hours, there was a lot of shame, a lot of guilt,
right.
And a lot of, this is just the person I am. So because this is just the person I am, I don't want to keep putting everybody through this. I don't want to be this terrible husband and terrible father that I am, because that's what was going through my head. And I'm so ashamed and I'm so upset with the hurt that I caused. The best thing to do is just die.
Yeah. Not be here.
Not be here. I couldn't bear it. The second attempt, I think, was more, I tried the first attempt, you know, went to go and get some help at hospital and was like, you know, I'm fine, and left, because you try to mask it. I'm all right. And you're clearly not, you know, you can't quite walk in a straight line, you're shaking and your heart rate's going all over the place, but I just need to get out of here. And I then kind of really started systematically thinking about it and thinking about how not to be here and how to spare people pain. And as daft as it sounds, I was trying to make it look a little bit like an accident and this, that and the other. So I didn't put people through pain. I was trying to think about my wife and my kids and my mom, and it just got too much at that point. But I'm glad to say that I picked up the phone,
yep,
and rang the mental health service and said, look, good. I'm really, really struggling. I'm in a bad place. And I'm, again, upset with myself. And I feel like I can't change. And I feel like I am the worst person that's walking the earth right now. And I can't live with that. I can't live with that shame.
Yeah. So I'm right in thinking that by the time the second time had kicked in, yep, you were already in touch with mental health services. You had a contact number.
I'd got a contact number that a good friend of mine gave me, because this was a point that I opened up and,
right,
and spoke to a friend and said, this is how I'm feeling and I don't want you to do anything about it. And it was quite a hard conversation, because, you know, I said to her, look, at the end of the day, if I'm not here in a week's time, please don't think,
yeah,
you couldn't help me. It was really trusting to tell her what yeah was going through. And she was like, you need to talk to these people and they can help you. And, you know, I kept the number and I made the second attempt. And then eventually I picked up the phone,
yeah,
and rang them, because I think the thing that stopped me was I was just a bit like telling myself, well, they can't help you,
yeah,
because I've spent the last 6-7 years of my life saying, oh, I can't change, because you get it into your head that you can't, and you think that, well, no one else is going to be able to help me. No one else has helped me so far, even yeah though when you get diagnosed with the ADHD, you look back at your life and see all these telltale signs,
yeah,
and wonder, how did everybody miss this?
Yeah.
How did everybody miss this? Because if they'd, you get to this point where you're like, if it had been seen sooner, how different could my life have been?
Yeah.
And you're just all over the place with it. But when I made that phone call and said, this is how I'm feeling, you know, they were great and like, can you hang on till Friday? You know, can you hang on for another day? Are you okay? Scale yeah of this to this. How are you feeling? They got me booked in. I turned up on the Friday and I completely broke down. I was in tears. I gave them the whole story of what had happened. And they were like, you know, don't worry. We can help. And I was quite skeptical.
There's a way like, out.
You can't help me. They even said that. Well, don't worry. We can get you there. No, you can't. You can't. Because I was still doing the whole, it's just the way that I am. I'll never change. I can't change. No one can help me. But I'd never seen a service like this before, and yeah, it was the exact place that I needed to be.
Yeah. And what service was that?
This was the crisis team in Nottingham.
Right.
And they're brilliant, and I'm sure every crisis team across the UK are brilliant, because I think they know how to get you there. They know how to get out of you what you need to say and make you feel that you're understood.
Yeah,
because, you know, I'm all for the GPs or whatever. I'm all for going for the GP, but, you know, unfortunately they're not trained in mental health, no, like this, and that's no one's fault. That's just they're not.
Yeah,
and you know, I did have a brief spell of going to speak to my doctor, and you know, it's kind of like a whole, you know, go for a walk and do something nice for yourself, and it's like that's not working. I've yeah been trying to do that for the last X amount of years. You know, I like going for a run. I go for a run. Do I feel any better? No. I don't feel any better, so going yeah to do something nice myself, it's not really going to work. I need a little bit more specialist help.
Yeah.
And I think once you get to that specialist help, that's great. But unfortunately, so I did say to you in August, I suspected I had ADHD.
Yeah.
I did go to the doctors, and to cut a long story short, a week before my wife and I did split up, I remember getting a letter through the post saying, your appointment is at 6 months' time. And I wish I'd said this to her, but I felt like I couldn't at the time.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say to her, I can't make 6 months. You know, yeah. I knew in my heart then that if I didn't get any help, I probably wasn't going to see in the end of the marriage.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to survive, sort of thing. And because I knew that, I was so stressed out. But rather than being able to communicate with her and talk, because it's not that I don't want to communicate with you, it's I don't know how to communicate with you, and I don't know how to do it in a rational manner and a calm manner, because I'm so stressed.
Yeah.
And all you see is aggression, and a person that's probably not very nice, whereas underneath it's a person that's absolutely screaming for help.
Yeah.
But sometimes you don't realise yourself that you're screaming for help. You think you're fine.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to portray that you're okay.
Yeah.
And underneath it all, you're not. But how do you tell someone that? And I think you know, there's this thing about you treat your friends and strangers nice, and you can treat the people that you love sometimes really, really bad, because you kind of, you know, you can get away with it. But also in the same respect, is you're doing it because the only people that you can do it with to let off all this steam that you've got, which isn't great for them, and they don't understand, why are you treating me like this?
Yeah.
But you can't always explain it to them, because it's hard, and you don't always know yourself what's going on. You're just aware that something's wrong. But again, with, you know, coming back 5 minutes ago, is especially for men, we're taught man up. So it's very hard to kind
get
of tell
it.
Someone that you love, I'm really struggling here and I don't know what's going wrong.
Yeah. Going back to the first time,
mm-hmm.
knowing what you know now,
yep.
would you have gone to the same place?
If I knew that all that help was out there for me, no.
Cool. Good.
But I think it's tricky when you are where you are with the thoughts that you've got, and you aren't aware that there's that help out there. So would I go to the same place if I was in exactly the same place not knowing that the help was there? I think, unfortunately, yes, I probably would have gone there. But if I'd have known that I could have got support, absolutely not. And I would have sorted this out years ago.
Yeah.
By going and saying, hey, there's something not quite right here. And I'd like to think that anybody that was in that stage wouldn't, and you know, for everybody that's listening, and there will be somebody listening that is thinking about taking their life, there will be somebody that is listening that has ADHD, there'll be somebody listening that has depression and anxiety and PTSD of all this stuff I've got and I'm dealing with, and I would say to them, go get some help. Even if they've been to the GP and the GP's, you know, go and do something nice for yourself, that's fine. It's okay to bypass the GP.
Yeah.
Get yourself online, type in suicide prevention helpline.
Mm-hmm.
There's loads of services out there. I volunteer for one myself, and they will start you on that path to get help, because there is light at the end of that tunnel. And, you know, I didn't believe this, you know, like I said to you, the absolute love of my life told me, you can change, you know, you can get through this.
Yeah.
I was, no, I can't. It's just the way that I am, that I'm saying you can get through it and you can do anything that you want to do.
Yeah.
You just need to find that right support system out there for you. And it is there. Even if it's a couple of times you've got to go through it, you will find it and you will change. I live the absolute best version of my life that I possibly can at the minute. And yeah, okay, the ADHD's there and it will always be there, but I've learned how to control it. I've learned how to deal with it. I've had to almost, in a sense, relearn. You know, I call it like relearning how to walk.
You've
got to do it all again. But the thing with getting the help is, I try to explain to people and use this analysis and say, imagine that you're colourblind, and imagine that you're painting a bench, and you're painting this bench green, thinking it's red. You've always been painting it green because that looks like red to you.
Yeah.
And the minute that you put on those glasses that allow you to see colour and realise that it's not the colour you thought it was, and you do pick the colour up and paint it, and the picture looks better than it did, that's like getting help with mental health and suicide, and it can all change for you.
What would you say to somebody that was listening that maybe in that space where they're going? So I get a lot of people saying, I don't want to end it. Mm-hmm. I want to pause it. Mm-hmm. I want off for a while. I want it to stop. I need the pain to stop.
Okay.
So what would you say to somebody that was in a place where they were going, I can't do this. We know we don't have a pause button. We know there's only one option. Well, no, there's two options, but there is no pause. We're either going to try and end it or we're going to carry on. What would you say to somebody that was in that space?
We had a little chat before you
press record.
The record button. And you know, something that you wrote down that we spoke about was acceptance. And I think acceptance is the first stage of accept that you are where you are. Okay, ended it's not the best thing to do, and it's not an advice to anybody at all, but accept that you are here right now with these thoughts that you have. Because when you accept it, it almost seems like it gets that little bit better of realizing, okay, I'm here.
Yeah.
And telling yourself that you can do something about this. The thing that's going on, you've got this little voice in your head that is like the devil on your shoulder kind of thing, of telling you one thing and that's not actually what's going on. So accept that that's happening to you and reach out for help. Because the minute that you reach out for help and find the correct help for you, it does pause it. It just slow it down a little bit. It's still there, you know.
It's like a lifeline,
Absolutely, it's like a lifeline. Yeah. And, you know, my therapist at the time was like, after I'd had the suicide attempt to calm down and wanting to end my life, I said to him, you know, I still don't want to be here.
Yeah.
I still am struggling with the person that I am and the person I've become. And I don't want to be here. And sometimes I walk to work and I think, you know, I don't want to be here. If I could just do X, I wouldn't be here anymore. And that would be great. But once I'd accepted that that's how I felt, it made it easier in a sense to go, it's okay, it's all right. That's just how I'm feeling right now. Because 5 minutes later, it changes.
It'd be
and
different.
I think within reason, do whatever makes you happy. So it's going to sound really silly, but, you know, I was at work and for the first, you know, I got a new job and for the first 2 months of working there, I used to disappear off to the toilet and I used to just lock the door and cry.
Yeah.
Because I just needed to cry. You know, men don't cry or whatever, so you kind of like, you know, biting down on your finger sort of thing, just letting it all come out. And, you know, when I finished and would come out into the yard and get on with my work, I'd see the ice cream van. So I'd go and buy an ice cream.
Perfect.
Because you just do whatever. Whatever you feel like.
Yeah. Just do it.
It's safe. just do it. Even if that's having an ice cream.
Yeah.
Even if it's going to McDonald's and eating 20 nuggets. Even if it's going on a bike ride or going to see it, whatever it is, taking the dog for a walk, just go do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
I think with stuff like that, you have to feel it first. You have to just, for me, it's about feeling it. We were talking about that kind of phrase earlier. So there was a couple of years ago, me and my partner had used to go to the cinema. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what was going off in my head. I have no idea. But I remember sitting on the stairs, putting my shoes on, going, I don't want to do this, don't want to do this. And I said to my partner, would you mind if we just sat in and watched a Netflix? My partner went, absolutely fine. The very thought of sitting in a cinema with loud music, loud sound in a darkened space was really great in me. So I had, but I couldn't have done that if I hadn't have felt it.
Yep.
Or I couldn't have done that had I been in a relationship where I couldn't have delivered that and knew that the response would be, of course, that's fine. So it was about me being in the right surroundings, somebody saying, that's fine, that's not a problem, and then not even questioning. No questions whatsoever. Yeah, of course, we'll sit and watch the video. So sometimes we have to feel we want an ice cream, feel we want to walk the dog, feel we want to sit and watch Netflix. Whatever it is, just do it.
Yeah. I think there's a massive element of feel, but I think also, because you've mentioned a partner, I think there's an element of trust there as well. And,
yeah.
And you have to trust your partner to know that, in a sense, that they're going to catch
it's okay.
you. Absolutely, that it's okay, and that it's okay to express. I'd say that it wasn't that I didn't trust my wife, it was more I didn't want to show her I was failing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to admit that there was a problem, because, you know, on one sense, it's like a 50-50 thing. There was a 50% of me that knew there was a problem and a 50% of me that didn't know that there was a problem. And I was fighting and battling with it and arguing in my own head and trying to sort it out in my own head, that what she saw was this guy that was frustrated by absolutely everything, and I mean everything, that was quite difficult to live with because I was fighting it in my head. Once I'd sorted it out with my head, you know, I was like Jekyll and Hyde. I'd gone from really moody and nasty and argumentative to, yeah, let's do this, let's do that, whatever. And it's like, whoa, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on here? That if you'd opened up and communicated and said, and I do this quite a lot to people at the minute, and I say, I don't really know how to tell you this because I don't really have the words. And I have ADHD, so sometimes I come across as aggressive, especially I do this on the phone when I've got to ring the bank or something and they've messed up something on my account. And I say, so please don't take it the wrong way, but this is what I need to tell you. And if you feel that I'm getting aggressive, please let me know because I need you to tell me this so I can, you know, it helps me to remodel how I talk to people.
Yeah.
And they're fine with it because you've told them, look, this is a problem for me, but I want to discuss this with you. I want to tell you this.
You put it out there.
I need your help. Yeah, and you know, for the people that are like, oh, I can't deal with that, that's fine. You know, that's okay. No problem. They might be dealing with something in their own life. So go find someone else that can help you, whatever you. But, you know, I working as a mental health coach, do talk to a lot of guys that are like, I just can't talk to my partner. I just can't talk to my partner about it. And it's like, I'm telling you that you can. And I'm telling you that they're there for you more than you think you are.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you that from experience because I didn't do it because I was scared constantly, 24/7, was scared. But if I'd have just said, I just need to tell you something and please bear with me because I have a mental health issue, I'm sure, to be fair, it wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah. What's really important there is, and I would say this in therapy, if they don't get it, and if they don't hear it, and if they don't understand it, then they're not right for you. Because they're not, if they're not going to hear that very simple, because we all have mental health.
We
all have it, and sometimes it's ill mental health, or sometimes it goes along the spectrum. Mm. If they're not hearing that, or if you feel you're not able to tell them, maybe they're not the right person. And that can be a really hard pill to swallow, that one there.
Yeah,
but it's the truth.
I think you can get an element of that. I mean, I was lucky in the respect that at the times that I was able to open up, which is few and infrequent, that, you know, my wife was the touch of a hand and the kind of, it's okay, I've got your back kind of thing. It was me trusting myself, I suppose. So, you know, I ultimately, it takes two to tango in a relationship, but at the end of the day, if you've got somebody with mental health, they kind of really, really push it and test the other person that doesn't, and that was me, quite testing. But I can say that my partner was there for me when I could open up, and if I had opened up, probably would have been fine. But if you are getting that respect, if somebody goes, you know, I can't deal with this, and I can't deal with the person that you are, and X, Y, and Z, then yeah, absolutely. I'd say maybe you need to have an honest conversation with yourself, because you can't, as I've learned this, you can't love and look after someone else if you aren't looking after number one.
Yeah.
And also, I think we've been taught that it's a bit selfish that you look after yourself. No, it's not. Self-care is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of my time, because if, sometimes with the ADHD, you talk to people and you think, do they like me? Am I saying the right thing?
Yeah.
You know, we're having a conversation and this is the, you know, the swan moment again, is, I might be gliding gracefully, I don't know, but underneath I'm like, oh no, what if I say the wrong thing? What if I do this? What if I do that? That you have to accept it and go, do you know what? It's okay, just look after number one.
Yeah.
Look after number one. And when you look after number one in the right way, and an unselfish way, everything else kind of falls into place.
Yeah.
And I was that person where I didn't look after number one, I looked after everybody else, because it was, well, what if they don't like me, and what if this, and what if I do that, and what this, and you know, my wife used to say to me all the time, when are you going to start taking time for yourself?
Hmm.
Like, what do you mean? She's like, when are you going to do something for you? When are you going to do something for you and do something for your family, rather than doing stuff for everybody else? But I've got to do stuff for everyone else, because back of your head, what if they don't like me?
Yeah.
And do you know what? It don't matter.
Yeah.
As long as you like you, and the people that are close to you have got your back, I don't think it really matters. Just give yourself a break.
Yeah, completely. Self-respect for me is the platform for a healthy life. And you're quite right. You have to like yourself first. If people don't like the fact that you like yourself first, then again, they're just not right. I always think I say this, and I say it really tentatively because I know people are going to think it's arrogant, but in my world, I'm number one. And the reason I'm number one is because once I put my own needs first, I then can be good enough dad, good enough husband, good enough therapist, good enough everything that I need to be.
Yeah.
But unless I put myself first, then I can't be that. And also, as I talk to my clients,
I'm encouraging them to put themselves first, so therefore I have to model that. Yep. I have to be that person. It's not selfish, it's not arrogant. We just have to, somebody has to take care of us, and mm-hmm. for me that starts with ourselves. Really does.
100% agree.
Conic, we have come to the end of our recording, so I just wanted to say a massive, massive thank you for being here and talking so honestly. Do you have any last words that you want to leave the listeners with?
I think I've told the listeners everything that I think they should know, but for those of you that are, you know, listening and this is triggering something within you, you're fine. You know, you're okay. Just keep going. Go and get some help. And, you know, if you ever see me around, because people seem to know who I am with an unusual surname, unusual first name, well, and surname as well, come talk to me, because we're all rooting for you. And I'd just like them to know that there are brighter days ahead, and whatever it is that they're going through, however bad the situation is, you can turn it around.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Remember, these podcasts are available at radionewark.co.uk. There's two apps, iOS and Android apps. Contact info is 01636 678033, or you can email the studio. So it's studio@radionewark.co.uk. We love your listener questions, so please keep firing those in, and we will try and do one at the beginning of each podcast. These podcasts are released weekly. If you think you've got a story that you want to share, then please drop me a message. Guthrie Therapy is on Facebook, so follow that. There's loads and loads of interesting information on there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being there. We can't do it without you. More importantly than any of that, take care of yourselves, because you are worth it. Take care. Bye-bye.